On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard another episode of The Big Fish. And first cast this morning, Anne Michie, the New England Tablelands, Tamworth area. And even though the drought is starting to bite a bit, still plenty of water in Keepit. And the social aspect of fishing and that oasis there at Keepit for the yellow belly and the cod and all of the great fish that they love to catch. And they've just had the Gone Fishing Day and had a blast. The kids have been catching some beautiful yellow belly. That's our first cast this morning on The Big Fish. Music historian Dorian Mode, Dr. Dorian Mode, is back, as a matter of fact, a doctor of music, to talk about the history of the fishing work song, the sea shanty. Stink has been doing nutting. That's all he's been doing on the tweed, nutting. And coming up, Craig McGill, talking about the fabulous silver trevally, a very underrated fish and great roar. That's all coming up on The Big Fish. I think bush people really understand, if you live in a country town, how important that local river is, or your local impoundment, those oases of fun and friendship and fishing. Anne Michie certainly knows in Tamworth and the New England Northwest, and loves her fishing, but loves the social side of it as well. Good morning, Anne.
Morning, Scott.
It's just great to gather around the fire after a day on the water and tell lies. In my case.
No, we never tell lies.
The one that got away. But you've been having some good fun, and even though the drought is starting to bite a bit, the impoundments still have a bit of water. They're absolute oases for you, aren't they?
They certainly are, Scott. Like, we love it out here at Keepit, and it's still looking good. Admittedly, the water line's starting to drop back a bit, but nothing like we've seen in the past. So as you said, Scott, it's so important for us to have these big impoundments where we can still come and enjoy and fish and forget about the worries and what's going on in the real world as such. We've had a couple of great days out here. Just recently, 2 weekends ago, we had our Gone Fishing Day, and we had quite a few young people come out, hadn't fished before, had been driving mum or dad and or auntie, uncle, anyone mad wanting to go fishing, and they got to come out. They got walked away with a brand new rod. We taught them how to hook on, and away they went, and assuring us they were going to come back another day. So hopefully we'll see them all again really soon as well. But there was some very happy kids out there learning how to fish.
It's still pretty good, isn't it? 83%. I just had a look on Water New South Wales. That's still pretty good.
Oh, yeah. There's still a hell of a lot of water out there. And there's fish in there. So actually on our Gone Fishing Day, I reckon some of my members' kids stitched me up a bit. They're like, oh, Annie, we'll come up and do the casting comp with you. And, you know, we haven't got a rod or anything. So, yeah, these young fellas, they came back with the nicest yellow belly I've seen in ages. They knew exactly what they were doing. They just wanted a new rod, didn't they? But the Howes boys cleaned up some really cracker yellow belly they pulled out of the water. And it was so nice to see the three boys from the same family all there with fish.
Oh, that's great. And are they fat and healthy with the water rise? I mean, surely they've had plenty to eat with that new ground being inundated.
Yes, they are. They're fat and healthy. The yellows are looking really good. There's still, even though it's close season, there's still reports of a lot of cod out there in the dam, and people aren't targeting them. They're still being a bit of a bycatch of them. And the big story with them is they're some of the healthiest fish that people have seen for ages as far as cod. They've, you know, no lernia on them, anything like that. They look great. They're happy and healthy. I even have one guy telling me, he said, honestly, Annie, we're not chasing the cod. He said, well, you know, trawling a yellow belly lure. He said, this bloody cod, we pulled him in and he still had a forky tail sticking out of his mouth and he'd hit the lure as well. So, you know, what can you do?
That's great. We're speaking with Anne Michie, and the Lake Keepit Family Fishing Club recently had their Gone Fishing Day, and all of the impoundments and the rivers are going well too. I know you call them those spotted carp, but the trout fishing has been just incredible along the Great Divide in the New England area. It's still going off. It's probably going to be a tough season for them, but after 3 years of incredible rain and great recruitment, the rivers are full of those. If you like doing a bit of wading and fly fishing or throwing a few little lures, they're absolutely in big numbers.
Yeah, okay. So That's good to hear for the trout fishermen. I know they enjoy it, and it's a very important part of our fishery. But as you say, Scott, they might be in for it if the predictions are right, and we're not going to get any decent rain until early next year. Some of those upland waterways might start to dry down a bit, and don't know where the trout will wind up then.
No, well, your natives are much hardier, aren't they? And I know you love your native cod and yellow belly and silver perch and the beautiful Tandanus, the old eel-tailed catfish is a great fish as well, and you've worked so hard to bring them back and bring back their habitat. Have you been up to any habitat work?
I haven't actually done much habitat work lately, but it's just right at the moment we've got a bit of environmental flow going on in our local region. There's a bit in the Peel, so we've got our bit coming out of Chaffee, and I've been talking with the guys there, so they're keeping it sort of above town, the stretch of water there, where we've actually got a really cool population of river blackfish. So not one of our recreational species, but a very important small-bodied fish and very important in our system. And it's good to see that the Peel supports these little river blackfish. So they're there, and it's also making sure that the nests stay covered for our catfish and our cod, so that they'll hopefully have a really successful recruitment breeding season for us. Keep those nests covered with water over the next month or two for them so that those little babies hatch out. So that's going on in the Peel. And also at the moment, I was out at Walgett yesterday. Nice flow of water going over the Walgett Weir, and that's being supplemented by some environmental water that's coming down the Namoi as well and into the Barwon. So there's a bit of water flushing around. Like, we've had a couple of really great years, as you said, Scott. Mother Nature turned it on and kept it going. And it's just nice now that this part of the season we can just top those rivers up a little bit and hopefully get another really successful breeding season through for our natives. And that'll give them the resilience going into the dry times of having just that bit bigger population that we can rely on that'll hopefully survive and thrive, get through this next dry spell on the wonderful cycles that are Australia, and we'll have some fish coming out the other side again.
It's The Big Fish with Anne Michie in the New England Northwest. I had no idea you had river blackfish in the Peel, and I always thought they were more down in the southwest slopes and down into Victoria, particularly where the old-timers rate them as a great eating fish. They're protected there, are they, in the Peel?
Yeah, slipperies they call them, don't they? So they're up around Benamy, but up in the Peel, so between Tamworth and Chaffee Dam, there's apparently quite a good population of them there. And also our platypus will benefit from it all as well, so not just the fish, there's all the other critters that call the river home that we've got to look after too. They're all important.
It's like what it used to say on the packet of sea monkeys, when we were little kids. It said, add some water and watch life spring out of this.
That's right. What they reckon, the marshes and things like that, it was dry for so long. And actually, I was talking to a fishery scientist, and that was the exact analogy he used. He said, it's like sea monkeys, Annie. You just add water and watch it grow. He said, it's amazing. Some of those dried up lakes, once you put water back in them and what actually appears there before you know it. So, good old Mother Nature, she does some amazing things that we can't.
And all those yellow belly, and it's fine to keep a couple for a feed. It's a put-and-take sort of fishery and keep it. It's a huge body of water. Are they all stocked or is there natural recruitment in there?
Well, my understanding is that they're mainly stocked. I'm sure there must be a little bit of natural recruitment, but I don't think there's much through Keep It. So there is quite a significant stocking program goes on all around the northwest. And we've got a little hatchery at Manila as well, and they specifically do yellow belly all the time, and they go back into Keep It and Split Rock, and I think they send a few up to Chaffee as well, but they're just for our local area.
And they're a fish you can take for a feed, aren't they? Some of the kids at the fishing day took a few, did they?
Yeah. A couple of, especially I think Pop was quite excited when the young fellas caught them, because it seems some of the older generation tend to like to eat the fish more than the younger guys. So I think it's just, they're ingrained with the catch and release.
Oh, is that nice? Keep one for Pop. Keep a yellow belly
for Pop. And I've also got a friend, every time he goes out fishing, he's got a an older Indigenous friend here in town who doesn't get out to fish as much, so he always takes one home for tracker as well. So, and I mean, that's sort of what used to happen anyhow. You always took one home for the older people that couldn't go out and fish and hunt and things anymore. So why not do it that way? Even though you can only take them out of the dams, the freshwater fish that I enjoy the most is catfish.
Oh, there's nothing better. Even if it's really muddy, it doesn't matter with catfish, and they're easy to catch too, aren't they?
They are, but I don't know where they've gone recently. I can't seem to catch them, Scott.
Yeah, look, if and they stock well. A lot of farm dams are full of them, and yes. You can get a really good feed there. Watch the spike, obviously. It'll give you plenty of
You learn about that really quickly.
You do. If they get, oh, my goodness, if you get whacked by one of those, you're in big trouble. And just a pair of pliers to pull the skin off. And they're gorgeous to eat, aren't they?
They are, yeah. It's such a beautiful, and I mean, people sort of look at you funny when you say they're a really white-fleshed fish, but they are. I do enjoy a catfish.
Yep. The funny thing is the catfish, which is native, and the redfin really are the two probably that are the best eating. I don't know if you've got many redfin up on the New England.
We haven't got redfin in our waterways just here. You have to go up on the Tablelands and up that way. They haven't ventured down the Hill to Wash yet. I'm sure, and I'm amazed that they're not here, but they're not at this stage.
Well, that's very good. They carry terrible diseases and can really knock about our native fish. So we don't want them, but if they're there, eat as many as you can, but don't translocate them either. That's a terrible thing to do to move them around. Looks like everyone's catching a few.
Yep, we are, and we're looking forward to a great end to the year and then roll into next year, and we'll have our big carp muster again. So, yeah, there's always something going on out at Keep It. And they are, like we were talking about, Scott, it's so important, the social side, and as we are heading into some drier times and some people might start doing it a bit tough, to come out and sit around out, as you said, around the fire of an afternoon and have a yarn or float around on a boat out in the water, it's, you know, can wash all your worries away or at least ease the burden a bit.
All right. Keep it going.
Yeah, we will, Scott.
Tight lines, Anne.
Tight lines, cold beers.
And Mitchie on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish with Scott Levi. And do you ever find yourself singing when you're out in the boat? It's a happy place, isn't it? When you get a bite and you catch a few fish and life's so good and you start to sing and carry on. I sing one of my favourite songs is Push Dorian Overboard, Push Dorian Overboard, course he is a Jonah. Good morning, Dr. Dorian Mode.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, I feel like a bit of a Jonah, but hopefully I've changed that Jonah status. On Friday I did the Neptune ceremony because I made the fatal mistake of renaming my boat without honouring Neptune. Of course, everyone at my little local boating co-op said, you've got to do that. And I thought it was all nonsense, like, you know, star signs, Leo with Pisces rising, all that stuff. But as I've had nothing but bad luck, two engines blow up, I went down, still having bad luck, my new project, I went down to the wharf, poured some champagne into the water, said some words, threw a piece of tin in the ocean, because the name of my boat, and people won't believe this, but it was called Isis. So
I can see why you changed it.
Change it to Jihad. But I wrote that on and threw it in, and so that then rusts away to Neptune apparently, and all is good with the world. So I'm hoping that my luck will change, Scott. So yeah, so I'm hoping to lose the Jonah nickname.
That's good. You've been an absolute Jonah of late. As you say, two engines blowing up and everything going wrong. So hopefully we'll be able to catch a feed of fish the next time you go out. But as a doctor of music, have you had a serious look at the history of the sea shanty? Because you've just recorded a beautiful album full of sea shanties, and we'll hear one of them. They're very authentic and very cool. I hear one of them up next on The Big Fish. But what's the story? Give us a little bit of a pocket history of the sea shanty.
Well, the sea shanty, I love sea shanties, and they really strike a chord, and with total respect and acknowledgement of our Indigenous friends, I'd like to think of the sea shanty almost as white Australia's sort of song lines. You know, there's a very deep connection that we all have to the sea, because most of us all came here, our families came here by ships, you know. Okay, some were ocean liners, but, you know, and some people flew here, but a lot of us, I mean, I've been researching the family history and finding out that I've got a lot of convicts in my history.
Yeah, they all came out on the boats. All came out on the ships. Months and months and months at sea.
Months and months. And these poor sailors, they had such tough lives. And the sea shanty was just designed to sort of synchronize tasks on sailing ships. You know, they helped sailors coordinate the efforts when hoisting sails or ropes or just different things. And also it was a way for them just to drink. One of the sea shanties we do with our group, the Bathtub Gin Orchestra, just for fun, is one called The Wellerman. And The Wellerman was a song, a sea shanty from, wow, it was from New Zealand. And it goes back to the Wellerman, who was from the Weller Company. And he would bring, which was a New Zealand company from, say, 1820s, and he would bring the tea and the coffee and the rum and all of that sort of stuff for the sailors. And that's the only thing they had to look forward to, and singing songs. So they'd sort of get drunk on grog, you know, which is watered down rum with lime juice and sugar and water, because they were drinking too much rum and falling to their death from the main yard and all that sort of stuff, the topsail. And they'd sing these songs, and it was just the one kind of bit of joy that they heard. And I think we were talking off air, Scott, about, I think, the influence probably on African Americans and some of those slave ships, that they would have heard a lot of those sea shanties from the bowels of the ship. And I think it's influenced blues and gospel music. I actually think there's a paper in it, but I really do think that it's, I mean, we saw the decline of the sea shanty with steam-powered vessels and things, because the need for manual labour decreased. You know,
they got soft. They got absolutely soft. Imagine how hard it was on a fishing boat when everything had to be done by human power, pulling in those giant nets and you know, the danger and so much stuff to kill you. You know?
Yeah, I'm reading a great book at the moment about the age of sail and basically about sailors, 18th century sailors, and just the lives that they had. And we have no idea. I mean, we get annoyed if our coffee doesn't have a little air hole lid on the top, so we can, you know, I mean, our level of comfort and their level of comfort was just unbelievable. Slept in hammocks that they had to put on deck, and they had about, you know, 10 inches of space to themselves.
And, you and I have got very, very crook backs from sitting behind computers for too long, we think we're great outdoorsmen. But how would we have gone in hammocks?
Oh, mate, we'd be struggling. Well, you are a bit more outdoorsy than I am. But, you know, I'm either in front of a piano or in front of the computer. And I purposely try and get up every couple of hours and go for a little walk and do all that. But they didn't have the luxury of that. They had to work their ring off. You know, it was a tough life. And you know, that these sea shanties were so diverse musically. You know, they incorporated elements of African, Caribbean, European, old Celtic music. You know, it's a really, I don't know, when I hear these songs, it just sort of sends shivers through my spine. I also think there's something really nice about men sort of standing around singing sea shanties and just doing something that just doesn't involve kind of drinking, you know, just knocking down a slab, but just doing something really beautiful. And they can be really masculine. A lot of the songs are really masculine. It can be a really joyful thing to do, you know, sing in harmony and sing these songs, the working lives of our ancestors.
We're speaking with Dr. Dorian Moe, who's a doctor of music and loves delving into the history of music. He's just recorded a beautiful album of sea shanties, and it's really popped up again when that group went onto TikTok and all the young blokes were singing sea shanties.
Right.
It was cool at school to sing sea
right.
shanties. That was the Wellerman too, was the one that really got 800 million hits on TikTok or something.
Who'd have thought a sea shanty would get 800 million? I mean, there's another great band that listeners should check out too, and that is the Longest Johns. They're very, very popular, and they're a young vocal group from England, south of England, and they sing a lot. But there's also French, you know, there's a French sea shanty group too, because the French had a big naval tradition. I mean, okay, we kicked their butts at Trafalgar and things, but they actually had a big naval tradition and went all around. Just finished reading the biography on Flinders, and he meets Bourdin in in Counter Bay, aptly named Counter Bay, and you know, that was one of my favourite sea shanties that we do with the Bathtub Gin Orchestra is the Northwest Passage, and that's all about Franklin's expedition to the Northwest Passage. That's another great sea shanty.
Who can forget
great narratives?
Master and Commander, of course. And
that's my ultimate favourite movie of all time. It's awesome. Daylight Second. And they sing Spanish Ladies, and I'll see Shandy called Spanish Ladies.
Yeah,
that,
it's a really great film. Yeah. Look, let's go out on one of yours. Is this an original? It's called Sea Wife.
So this is an original. So, yeah, it's called Sea Wife, and it's about the closure of the tuna factories and things around Bega and that sort of area, Eden, and sort of the decline of that industry. So I've tried to write it like, so it's kind of got modern sort of hip sort of jazz harmony, but it's written in that sea shanty style. So, yeah, you'll hear accordion and ukulele. I've got the very famous James Muller on ukulele. So it's kind of a fun jazz version, sort of jazz musicians take on sea shanties.
Dorian Mode, thanks again for joining us on The Big Fish.
Pleasure. Tight lines.
Sunlight so red on the ocean. Seagulls, they wheel and they cry. We chug our way from the harbor. Sea wives all waving goodbye, goodbye. Haul them nets, boys, haul them nets. One good catch will pay our debts. I've mortgaged my home for a life on the sea. My sea wife is waiting for me. Storm clouds, they frighten the ocean. Water as black as the skies. Lightning does crackle, the wind will be howling. Sea wives all waving goodbye, goodbye. Haul them nets, boys, haul them nets. One good catch will pay our debts. I've mortgaged my home for a life on the sea. My sea wife is waiting for me. The boat rolls and heaves in the ocean. Bone smokes a whinny and sings. Song soon had everyone laughing. We'd haul our catch and we'd grin, we'd grin. Haul them nets, boys, haul them nets. One good catch will pay our debts. I've mortgaged my home for a life on the sea. My sea wife is waiting for me. Lost his wife just last Christmas. The cannery now is a mall. The boat lies there rotting, all green in the harbour. It just isn't Christmas at all, at all. I've mortgaged my home for a life on the sea. My sea wife is waiting. Sea wife is waiting, my sea wife is waiting. Sea wife is waiting, my sea wife is waiting. Sea wife is waiting, my sea wife is waiting. Sea wife is waiting for me.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Thank you.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
You've been on your old stomping ground, the Tweed, and you've been crabbing and nutting, and you'd been doing nutting. What, did right, you make that word up? Is there really a thing called nutting?
Well, I don't think it ends in an E-N. It might end in an I-N-G. I'm not too sure. But I go nutting. I'm on my way back now to Port Stephens, but I've had a couple of weeks up in the north, and I really do enjoy it. There's so much to see and to do, different to what I do when I'm in Fingal Bay. And it's fascinating here because Fingal Head is only 3 kilometres from where I stay, like the old home on the Terenora Lake. So there's a Fingal Head here, which has a lighthouse, and there's a Fingal Bay where I live, which also has a lighthouse. But what is also very different, Scott, is the hinterland.
Yeah, that's right. Is that where you go nutting?
Well, yeah, you go up where the trees are. They're not around the river. They're up in the hills, up in the good soil. The soil is just so beautiful. And there's places here. I go on a little trip that I always do. I drive from West Tweed Heads and I go up through Blamble, a little place called Blamble, where I used to play a bit of cricket up there. And again, the soil is magnificent. And then from there I go to Tumbulgum, and then I head across to a very special place in our lives called Coogeon. Now, Coogeon was where my great-grandfather and the Clark family settled. And he was, up until 1890... a very wealthy man. He had a pub and a general store, and he had race horses. And in Coogeon, Mr. Clark there, Henry Clark, he was sort of like the landlord. I think there was some sort of a recession in the 1890s, and it foreclosed on him. So he went from an incredibly wealthy man to someone that was stone motherless broke. And then he headed for Western Australia to look for gold, and of course he didn't find it. So the family history here is very, very interesting. But Scott, there are also places called Talgum and Yukai and Byangum, and they're up behind Mwoolumba, up in the hills behind Mwoolumba, and that's where the Tweed River starts to trickle. And in those waters are some beautiful bass.
Yeah, lovely bass fishing up the headwater of the Tweed in that hinterland. But before we get onto that, where do you go nutting? It's somewhere around the old Clark stomping ground?
Well, this is, again, it's up in the hills. And this tree is one particular tree. It's a bit, I mean, there are a lot of plantations from between here and Ballina. Is real macadamia country. But there's macadamias and macadamias, you see. There's what they call a Queensland bushnut. Well, that was sort of the poor cousin of a macadamia, because a macadamia is a big nut with a thin shell and a big kernel. And, of course, if you haven't had macadamia nuts, they're just beautiful. But the Queensland bushnut, well, he tastes the same. But he's got a thick shell, and if you whack it with a hammer, you've got to go 30 metres down the road to find the nut.
Off it goes. I've looked up, Stinker, I've looked up nutting in the Cambridge Dictionary, right? Well, it says nutting, to hit someone or something with your head. For example, to use it in context, the guy turned round and nutted him.
Well, no, that's not what I'm doing. No, that's what I call the Liverpool kiss.
That's right.
That's different from what I do. I don't go around Liverpool kissing everybody. I go go and sit under this tree, and then the nuts come out raining down upon me. But once I've got these nuts, and they're the real, like I said, the big nut with the thin shell, that's what you want. You don't have to chase them so far. And then you whack them. Well, I still whack them with, there's machines you can get, but I still whack them with a hammer. Anyway, when I've got probably 20 or 30, just the nut, I put them in on a plate, and then I put them in the microwave for 2 minutes and 10 seconds in the microwave. And then when they come out of the microwave, I spray them with a canola oil, and then I shower them with salt. And when I've done that, I put them in a closed container and give it a good shake, and then I'll leave it there for quite some time. And then when you go back, oh, they're just magnificent. They're really crunchy, and they taste beautiful. So the only real problem is just sitting there with a hammer and banging them. But, yeah, so that's one of the things I really do enjoy. But we were going to go bass fishing, but we don't take up lures. I'm still not a real, like, I'm a dinosaur when it comes to any sort of lures. So I normally just get a half a bucket of worms. Well, that's all well and good. But the problem is it's been so dry up here that the compost heap is as dry as a bone. So I dug into the compost heap to get some worms to go bass fishing up at Byangham, and no worms, too dry. But interestingly enough, one other thing is that the old Byangham Bridge, which is now gone, there's a new Byangham Bridge, but the old Byangham Bridge was built by my grandfather.
Oh, there you go, and a good spot to catch an Australian native bass. We're speaking with John Clark, known to all who love him as Stinker. So you've been nutting, bassing, and, well, you didn't go bassing, and crabbing.
And crabbing, nah. What's it say in the dictionary about crabbing?
Hang on, I'll grab the dictionary and look it up while you tell me about it.
Well, of course, our boat. The boat that I've got here up on the Terranora Lakes is permanently either on the water or up on the slide, so I can just push it and I'm into the water, and within 10 minutes I can drop two crab traps, and that's all I need. I get some nice fresh bait from down at the fish shop, and then I put the bait in the two crab traps, and then I set them up in the lakes. And we've been getting more blue swimmers, and not little ones either. These ones are crackers. And that makes for a really good feed for the family. And it's good fun to sit around a table and crack and crunch and have a big boneyard in the middle of the table where everyone throws their shells. And, of course, that's really good burley if you want to use that. So, that gives me a lot of pleasure. When I always have the family around and we have a big feed of seafood, that gives me equally as much pleasure as catching them.
There's nothing nicer than blue swimmers. I think they're better than the muddies, don't you?
I do. I think they're the most beautiful tasting seafood of all. A big blue swimmer is just fantastic. But it's interesting that the laws that apply here regarding crabbing in Tweed Heads are different from the laws that apply in Port Stephens. In Tweed Heads, you can have two traps and four witch's hats, if you wish, and drop nets. In Port Stephens, witch's hats are banned, and traps that have got entrance over 32 centimetres are banned. So, but in Port Stephens, you can have two traps and four drop nets. Now, all that has to do is with turtles. And now, because 9 years ago, I was getting regular concerns from people right throughout Port Stephens that turtles were drowning in crab traps. So with fisheries, we changed the laws of crabbing in Port Stephens, and it has been one of the most successful moves we've ever done. There hasn't been a drowning of turtles in crab traps in the last 9 years since we changed our laws. That's a really good story. I like telling people that story.
Yeah, great example of proactive management and good active good lobbying, I should say, good lobbying by the local people. Do you want the definitions of crabbing from the dictionaries?
Yeah, let's go. As long as I don't have to headbutt people. It doesn't say anything about headbutt.
No, it doesn't say that. But listen to this. It's amazing when you look at these words. One dictionary definition of crabbing is a finishing process for reducing shrinkage and creasing of woolens and worsteds by stretching the fabric onto a rotating cylinder and immersing it in hot air. Good heavens.
And I'm not doing that either.
Here's another definition of crabbing. He began crabbing sideways across the roof, so going in a sideways direction, which you can understand. And, of course, it simply means to go out and catch crabs as well.
Well, there you go. So I'm not walking sideways, and I'm not giving anyone a Liverpool kiss. So I'm a lover, not a headbutter, if you know what I mean. And the only other thing that, I really do enjoy, apart from the backyard, which you've got it's a fantastic mango season. Oh, at this stage, the mangoes are about as big as ping pong balls, but they'll be right around about Christmas, so that's something to look forward to. But also there are some beautiful, really beautiful Sydney rock oysters here up on the Tweed. And unfortunately, and it's a sad, sad tale, that they no longer exist in Port Stephens. So, I keep pretty much to myself on the Tweed. I'm right up in the lake system, and that's where I stay. I don't fish the beaches, and I don't fish other river systems, or I rarely go to sea. I go to sea occasionally, but I'm quite happy just to bob around in a boat, crabbing or heading up into the hills to do a bit of nutting.
I'm pretty good at doing nutting all day as well. Hey, tight line stinker.
There is, Scott.
There is, mate.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Craig McGill has the Sydney scene covered. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, mate.
Well, the Sydney Harbour scene anyway. That's where you tend to hang about, Middle Harbour and all around, well, wherever the fish are, Craig.
Look, it's been pretty good, actually. There's been a lot of salmon around, some big schools foaming up on the top, sort of out around the heads, up into the harbour a little bit. Elizabeth Bay, Double Bay up around that area, a few up in Middle Harbour. There was a big load of them working the surface in amongst the moorings and that, on the run up to the Spit Bridge the other day. And just a few popping up here and there everywhere, really. We were fishing for trevally over near Quarantine Point, which is another thing that's been really good this season too, is the trevally. Millions of them, some good size ones too.
Do you like them sashimi?
Oh, they're fantastic sashimi. Absolutely. Yeah, I like
think
them
they're,
cooked too.
I think they're the best. I think they're better than, I dare to say, because they're the real iconic fish that you chase, but I think they're better than kingfish.
Absolutely, and they're good cooked as well.
I think you put me onto that, actually, now that I remember back, but I can't get enough of them now. They're gorgeous with a little bit of wasabi and a bit of pickled ginger and a little bit of nice soy. Gosh, they're good.
I chop them up into I sort of bone them and get all the bones and the skin off, and so it's just meat, and then I sort of chop it up into a bit of a coarse mince, I guess you'd call it. And then I finally grate some ginger and finely chop some shallots and mix that through with a tiny little bit of sesame oil and just mix it all through and then form little patties of it and just eat them raw like that. They're absolutely delicious.
Gosh, that sounds good. And that's sort of a ceviche, isn't it?
A fish. Yeah, it's like that stuff they do with the raw mints, and then they pack it into a little container so it sort of holds its shape. One thing, and then you just pick it up with the chopsticks.
I think you've got to watch that sesame oil. It's a very pungent, powerful seasoning, isn't it? Just a little bit.
Just a little bit, yep. Just a drizzle. You don't, yeah, it is. It's very strong. You don't want to put too much.
No, I remember I used it once to fry something. I thought it was just like using olive oil or something. It was inedible. It was a bad rookie mistake. But it's the Big Fish with Craig McGill on Sydney Harbour. Gee, it's great when the silver trevally are there in numbers because they're such a great fighting fish. They're so easy to clean. They're really easy to clean, you know, with being such a flat fish. And they're very easy to bone and skin. They're just so easy to prepare, actually.
Mm. No, they're a great fish. And like you said, they're really good fighters. You can always tell when you've got one because they circle like a tuna.
They never give in, do they? They always turn side on and go round and round and don't stop. What's the biggest one you've caught in Sydney Harbour, Craig?
Oh, I guess we've caught them up to 3 kilo. Which is a good harbour one, but I've seen them a lot bigger than that offshore. I think they probably, you know, the little ones are in the harbour and then they sort of move offshore once they get a bit bigger.
But, in Lord Howe Island, when we're over there, they, you know, average 50 centimetres long. You get ones there that are 10 kilos. They're just ridiculously big. They pull like a golden trevally or like a GT. They are just impossible to stop. You catch them while you're catching the kingfish off Lord Howe Island, and they're in big numbers. They're huge over there, and they're the same fish. So I don't know whether they migrate and get bigger when they go over there or something. I'm not quite sure.
I'm not sure, actually. But they are the same, maybe just different feed. If they've got – it's like the New Zealand kings are bigger than ours. It's probably just because they've got a better food supply, maybe. And, they'll take bait. So if you've got kids on board, you can set them up with a really light outfit and get a bit of a burley going. It's just like you're fishing for yakkers, really. Get a bit of a burley and some little cubes of bait and as little weight as possible. They tend to be a bit of a mid-water fish. So, you know, just let the baits gently drift down if there's not a lot of current. But they will take lures too. We often pick up, and they tend to be better sized ones too. When you're flicking for flathead, sometimes we'll get some good-sized trevally. But I've also seen them feeding up on the surface, where they're bubbling, particularly when the little krill are around, the little
jelly prawns.
Yeah, and they get into them, and they're actually quite easy to get on a little chrome lure when they're like that.
Great fish. I often catch them. I'll have different leads when I'm fishing for the whiting, depending on the run on the sand flats. And if the lead's too small, as you say, and you've got the live nipper on and it's starting to elevate off the bottom, you'll get it on that rig, and you won't get it on the rig with the slightly bigger ball sinker holding the nipper down. And then once you know they're there, you strip the lead back or take it off and throw them over unweighted. You need to get it down a bit. Yep. They're sort of, as you say, it's very true, they like it mid-water.
Yes. They do, yeah. I often fish with reusable split shot. Have you seen the ones that you can open?
I think I saw them when we went for that Ludwig fish, the Ludwig fly bait challenge. I'm sure you had them then.
I did, yeah. The ones I get come in about four different weights, and they're like a split shot, but they're hinged, so you can squeeze the back hinge and they open up. So you can very quickly, without having to unrig or cut the split shot off and waste it, you can very quickly change weights. And I've found them fantastic when I've been fishing for trevally, because you can just, like you said, you find that depth, and, you know, sometimes it's just a fine adjustment. You can just unclip one of these things. But there used to be a site called, I think it was Dreamfish, and an Aussie fella, he made them. I think he made them here in Australia. He used to pour them himself.
What a great idea. A lot better for your teeth, too.
I learnt my lesson the hard way with that one. I've got quite a big chunk off the front of my tooth. I had it fixed up, but, yeah, biting split shot when I was a young idiot.
Whenever I go to the dentist, they open your mouth, and straight away the experienced dentist say, "You're a fisherman. Huh? Look at the notches in your teeth from biting line." Yes, I think there are a few listening to this who've got a few of those notches for the years of biting off line and biting leads. And I even bit a bit of wire with I shouldn't have bitten once. It took a chunk out of my teeth too. The old teeth,
yeah,
the old fisherman Don't use knives, just teeth. It's the Big Fish with Craig McGill talking about catching beautiful silver trevally in Sydney Harbour. Gosh, they're a great fish, and they're everywhere, aren't they? They over every type of habitat. They'll be out in the deep water. They'll be over the weed beds. They'll be in the sandy bits of the harbour, up the estuaries. Yep. They're just everywhere.
Yep, absolutely. You know, you'll get them in the channels where the water's moving fast. I've caught them right up in the mangroves up above Roseville Bridge when I've been fishing for brim up there. Mind you, you need pretty good water. Like, that's after a long spell of no rain when you've got that nice clear water up there. But, yeah, they'll go well upstream. And versatile bait, lures.
Yeah, just great.
Anywhere way offshore and right up the estuaries.
Great little fish. Just love them. There's always something going on in Sydney Harbour, Craig McGill. It sounds like you're getting a few, and it's good to have that variety as well. What about some of the other pelagic fish? The bonito in still?
The bonito they've made a showing, but they haven't really schooled up in a big way yet where they've been consistent. But if you troll north or south head, particularly south head at the moment, you will get some reasonable size bonito. Last year, the bonito were in plague proportions, but they were tiny. They were no bigger than, a decent-sized slimy, but absolutely millions of them. So I'm sort of expecting this year, they grow pretty quick, the old bonito, so I'm expecting this year we're going to see a lot of them once that water warms up a little bit. There's been salmon. Oh, well, we talked about that. Plenty of salmon around the place. There is kings. They're not what I'd call thick yet, but... And mostly upstream, so up above the bridge in the main harbour and up in middle harbour. Haven't found too many in the lower reaches yet, but they should be due. The bigger ones should be due any time now in the lower reaches. But the ones we're getting upstream, mostly rats, but the occasional 75 and 80, enough to make them worth targeting. The water up in middle harbour at the moment, it'll tell you on your sounder that it's 22, but I can tell you it's really cold down deep still. So it's just that changeover of seasons. It's taking a while to warm right through the water column. So the kings tend to be a bit slow. You'll see your rod just sort of lean into it a little bit. They're not real vicious strikes, and they're not fighting real hard when you get them. So you need really good baits, your cuttlefish and your squid, and fish on the tide turns. You want to work really fast on the tide turns. But yeah, there's kings up there. There's plenty of flathead. There's very good flathead in the bays at the moment. If you want to flick some soft plastics around.
Squid? What about the squid? Because they're very important food and bait.
Yep. The arrow squid are really starting to thicken up now, just on the open shoals in the lower harbour. Plenty of them. And cuttlefish on the bottom too, the little morning cuttlefish. Been plenty of them. Haven't seen a lot of southern calamari yet. I've never found this to be a good time of year. You get that water that we call November green, which is that algae water that you get early in the season now when the sun sort of first hits the colder water and the EAC is coming down and pushing a few upwellings. You get that slimy green water, and that tends to that's not great for the southern calamari. They like really good ocean water. But the arrow squid, they're going nuts. They don't, they're an estuary squid. They don't mind a bit of murky water. Plenty of them out there.
No, sounds like it's all go. Just get out and get into it.
Yeah.
A lot of wild weather offshore with the big southerly change this week. So maybe up the harbour and some of those many nooks and crannies. Great, just stay out of the way of the sailors and the Manly ferry and you'll catch a feed.
Yep, absolutely, mate.
Tight lines, Craig McGill.
Thanks, mate.
Ain't no fish. Ain't no flounder, ain't no tuna, ain't no fish.
Holy mackerel, some days there just ain't no fish.
Ain't no perch,
ain't no flounder, you flounder for fish.
Ain't no fish.
And although at times you get a mess full, other days are less successful. Some days there just ain't no fish.
Ain't no fish. Ain't no fish.
Some days we'll start mighty fine.
With a splash.
With a nipple that tugs at your line.
Mighty fine.
But you reel it in to find you caught a beat-up shoe that's leaking water. Some days there just ain't no fish.